The maker of OxyContin, Purdue Pharma, is asking this week for one of thousands of lawsuits against it to be thrown out, one in Massachusetts, against the company and the family that owns it. Last month, Purdue reached a $270 million settlement in a class action suit in Oklahoma, accusing Purdue of playing a central role in the opioid crisis. This is just the latest blockbuster class action lawsuit in a country that has seen many of them over the years. And for a look back at the history, we're joined by Brian Ballow and Nathan Connolly, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Hi to both of you.
Hey, hey.
Hey, so, how you doing?
Doing well. And take us back. When did we start to see class action lawsuits in the United States?
So for those who might be less familiar, individual actions are those where you have basically one person specifically trying to bring a claim. And the class action is a really interesting 19th century development where many people with similar grievances basically joined together to file a lawsuit. And these were relatively rare as litigation in the 19th century when it was difficult to get people organized. Judges had to basically recognize people as being a class, in fact. And so you really don't get what we would believe to be or understand to be the modern class action suit until the early part of the 20th century. And there's a really important case that comes out of Boston around a giant molasses flood that occurs in January of 1919. Mm-hmm. Basically, some 40 feet of molasses barreling down the street in the north end of Boston, 2.3 million gallons, and it kills 21 people.
Well, at least we know it didn't move real quickly. Nathan.
35 miles an hour, in fact,
wow.
Brian, which
wow.
is fast for folks
for molasses.
Foot. That's right. That's right. In January.
And you can't really move very quickly through the North End at all these days because there's so many people.
That's right.
Go ahead. Continue.
No. So the United States Industrial Alcohol Company, who was ultimately responsible for this disaster, again, 21 people killed, 150 people injured. They wound up having to pay over $600,000 in damages, which in 2019 dollars is about $9 million. And so this became what we would recognize as a corporation paying big money over protracted litigation to a large number of people. And for the most part, you know, what we have now is a combination of these kinds of large corporate actions and other actions that are built around, say, civil rights or other equality cases and such.
Well, and let's talk about civil rights. Class action lawsuits have been used in the fight for civil rights, including a key case in 1949.
Yeah, that's right. So in 1949, the NAACP tries to bring a case basically on behalf of African-Americans who are being drafted into the military and who don't want to serve in segregated units or be trained in segregated fashion. So Tomlinson v. Hershey becomes a stand-in for a class action suit that the NAACP is trying to do to basically put teeth in the executive order that Truman had already signed as president to desegregate the military. And of course, the challenge to this is that you have to basically get people to show up and report for duty before you even have a leg to stand on. And so the NAACP found itself pretty flat-footed against the military brass that was very effective through the early 1950s in resisting the desegregation ruling. By contrast, of course, the NAACP is bringing another class action claim in the realm of education in 1951 that ultimately becomes Brown versus the Board of Education, which, as we know, really did represent the death knell to separate but equal accommodations as we knew it in the United States, or at least in the law.
Brian, one of the best known class action lawsuits in this country's history is the one made famous by the movie Aaron Brockovich. That would be Anderson versus Pacific Gas and Electric.
Yeah, and that's the reason to talk about it. You know, the judiciary doesn't get a lot of press. It doesn't get a lot of publicity. And frankly, people don't know that much about what goes on in courtrooms. And one of the reasons that this class action suit is so important is that Hollywood made a film about it. And the basic story is a feisty woman, played by Julia Roberts in Hollywood in the movie, convinces a lawyer that she's working with, she's a legal aide, a law clerk, to go after one of the biggest utilities in the world, Pacific Gas and Electric. And she does that because she discovers, going through real estate records, all these medical records. And what are they doing there? Well, it turs out that PG&E are buying up land because they recognize, they knew, that they had dumped a cancer-causing chemical, chromium, into the water supply, and that they had been doing that for roughly 20 years. Now, this case doesn't take place until the 1990s, but it's also a story where the little guy beats, Goliath. And it's one of the biggest settlements in the history of class action suits at, up to that time. It was about $330 million. The bad news, Jeremy, is that if you go to this little town in California where this is all set, it's still pretty much a ghost town, and they're still trying to get that chromium out of the water supply, or at least look at it very carefully. And that's really the story. As Nathan was saying, we think of the courts as elitist,
right?
But in fact, the courts have been instrumental in helping the little person fight back to create a kind of corporate or governmental responsibility. Mm-hmm. And we don't think of the courts in that way all that often.
Mm-hmm. Now, we are in the midst of the Me Too movement right now. We haven't seen any class action lawsuits related to that, but there have been significant class action lawsuits in the past regarding sexual harassment, right, Nathan?
There have. I mean, one of the most important cases really came through the efforts in the late 80s and early 90s to try to make the workplace a more equitable place for women. The major case in this, of course, is Jensen v. Eveleth Taconite Company, which is a Minnesota-based case that comes out around the question of mining. And you might remember the film North Country, which tries to capture some of these efforts on the parts of women to basically secure equality. Now, what's so amazing about this, Jeremy, is, of course, as Brian said, I mean, you have this long sense of the judiciary as actually being sometimes to the left of Congress or other institutions in protecting rights. And so the ability of people to even file class actions is a really important terrain for people being able to secure some benefits. And so in the 1980s, you have these women who are basically beginning to realize that they can file class action suits when they're not getting certain kinds of redress from labor unions. I mean, from the 70s through the 80s, you have women who are basically being harassed at this mine. They're suffering any manner of, you know, threats of violence and other kinds of sexual assaults. Mm-hmm. And it really becomes necessary for them to file as a group. And what's so challenging about, you know, this case in particular is just how long it took. I mean, you're talking about women who begin proceedings and complaints in the mid-80s. They're filing class action in the late 80s and don't even get a judgment until the early 1990s, right? And once that judgment comes down, it is, in fact, the first example of a class action suit on the basis of claims of sexual harassment, which then adds sexual harassment to a history around civil rights, environmentalism, and consumer protection. But the women themselves in the process had to, in many cases, relive very traumatic experiences, and in some cases felt as if it was not worth the claim to try to go through and relive that episode.
So big picture here, obviously class action lawsuits in the history of this country have been an effective tool for getting things to change, but some of them do fail. And I have to think, in my own personal experience, I feel like I've gotten a few postcards in the mail that say that I am owed 8 cents in a class action lawsuit that I didn't even know I was a part of.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, I mean, there were efforts to try to make it possible for people to basically become the beneficiaries of these suits. I mean, it's important to recognize that most people as individuals can't afford to make these claims, and they certainly can't pursue a protracted legal claim in most cases. But what did happen in the mid-60s was exactly what you're describing, Jeremy, where in some cases you have to opt out of a class action claim. You may not even know that you're part mm-hmm. of one of these suits. That was a relatively recent development in the history of class actions as they go.
One of the other things that we often miss, Jeremy, is the reaction to them within corporate America or
right.
within the government. If a large corporation pays a huge amount for, let's say, vermiculite mixed with asbestos, for asbestos poisoning, mm-hmm. Or for toxic dumping, or for what happens when you smoke a cigarette, everybody takes notice of this. So one of the reasons that we can feel safer with the products that we buy and with the water we drink is that everybody is taking note of the potential liability
right.
Of violating the regulations, violating the laws. So it's kind of a hidden form of regulation and protection. That, again, it's not in our face every day, but trust me, corporate lawyers and counsels take note of every important class action decision.
Well, and they're painful for the company, even if they might not be that beneficial for the individuals, especially if there are thousands of them in a class action lawsuit. No.
They do have a real prophylactic impact, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the things that we as consumers oftentimes have to be mindful of is that we opt out of class action rights oftentimes without even being aware of it. I mean, it really is on the front burner of lawyers' concerns. I mean, and you have terms and conditions to things that you agree to, say with Spotify or Microsoft, that then make it difficult for later class action claims to come down the road. And so exactly as has been said, I mean, there's such an atmosphere around concerns of the class action that in many cases, people are trying to take preemptive measures to make it less likely for companies to be exposed to them.
That is Nathan Connolly, and we've also been speaking with Brian Ballow. They are historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Guys, thanks so much.
Thank you,
Jeremy.